in West Africa. Colette came to know the Lord not as a child or a teenager, as many people do, but when she was in her 20s. And it took a few years for God to move her overseas, but she's been there for just over 20 years now. I think it said 1997 was when you went over, so just over 20 years, 21 years that she's been serving in West Africa. We're glad to have her with us this morning, and we welcome her to our church today. We just want to let you know as well. I know you're going to enjoy hearing what she has to say, and we do have an opportunity if someone would like to get a group of people and take her out for supper or have her into your home this evening. She's going to be staying over and traveling to Grand Prairie tomorrow. She will be here this evening. Come and see her after the service or see me, and we'll get that set up for supper time this evening. So let's give Colette a welcome to Slave Lake Alliance Church.
Good morning, everyone. As John Piper has said, missions exist because worship doesn't. There are people in the world who don't know that they can worship the God who created them. A couple of years ago, the Lord gave me this wonderful opportunity to go to Israel. And so there I was. I was with a group of other single international workers. We were at a conference for singles. And we decided after the conference that we'd take a little road trip together. And there was this park in the desert. And in that desert, they had the tabernacle, a copy of the tabernacle of Moses. And so we went there and we toured through it. And, you know, it was just being there in Israel and being in the tabernacle of Moses was just like a really inspiring time. And the young Jewish girl that gave us the tour talked about the spiritual significance of the tabernacle for us today. And so I thought, well, that's really interesting. I kind of heard a little bit about that before, but I'd like to know more. And so when we got back to Jerusalem, I went to the Christian bookstore in the old city, and I went in and I said, I'd like to know if you have a book on the tabernacle in the wilderness and the spiritual significance. And he says, yes, as a matter of fact, we have a couple of books. And I'm going to recommend this is the book that you would start with first. It has kind of like the real foundation or whatever. He says, if you want to get more in depth or whatever, you can go from there. And he, you know, gives me their like number one book to read on the tabernacle in the wilderness. And I look at it. It's called The Tabernacle in the Wilderness by A.B. Simpson. And I said, oh, I know that guy. You know, I'm a part of his organization. And I was shocked. And I shouldn't have been, you know, but A.B. Simpson is a really respected person from the past that God used in really mighty and significant ways. And we are a part of his heritage. And we are a part of the legacy that God has left behind. And so I started, you know, thinking, oh, I should be rereading some of the books that I had read maybe when I was in Bible school to know a little bit more about this. And so that was kind of like the seed that God kind of planted in me that day about 6 years ago. And I started studying again the life of A.B. Simpson. I like to read the old, some old history books and to know not the facts and the figures of this person did this at that time and they were born here and went there and all that kind of stuff. I want to know like what kind of life did they had that God could trust them so much with such a big vision, and how did they live out that vision? How did they live their everyday life? Like what was it that really made them a Christ lover? And so I started to study Simpson, and he is an inspiring figure, and I'm really thankful that God has put me in an organization with such a rich heritage, and that heritage extends all over the world. One man, one place. He didn't do it on his own. He began with seven faithful people who had the same vision. Yes, he's the leader that we look up to today and say, oh, look at what he did. But he started with seven faithful people with the same vision, and he has grown in his legacy to a to a church with more than 7 million people worshiping in an Alliance church today on Sunday morning in 81 different countries of the world. And I have a privilege of being in a country where we can preach the gospel freely. And so I'm here today not to tell you what I'm doing in Guinea. I'm here to tell you today what Jesus is doing in Guinea. He's drawing people to himself. He's establishing his kingdom reign. And he's doing it through a group of people. And he's doing it through people like you. I was sent out from the Grand Prairie Alliance Church in 1996 to go into language study and then to go over to Africa. And so through the Grand Prairie Alliance Church, it's my home church, and through other churches that have come alongside and partnered with what we're doing, God has planted his kingdom, and we are so thankful. I am so convinced more and more of the other words of John Piper. He has a book called Let the Nations Be Glad, and he would say, prayer is the work of the ministry, and service is gathering up the results. We can preach, we can go, we can be alongside of people, but the battle for their souls, the unseen realm, is their soul, and that's where the battle is won and lost. And our prayers do affect the change in people's thoughts, in their heart, and their willingness and ability to accept the life of Christ into their heart and life. So I'm so privileged this morning to bring you the testimony of what so many servants of God are accomplishing in and through the Lord Jesus Christ. I have a great group of people that I work with in Guinea, and I have a great group of people that I work with here in North America. And together we serve the Lord in that foreign land. A.B. Simpson had a philosophy of ministry, and one of that philosophies was that whatever you're doing in the home front, which was where you live, and whatever you're going to do overseas or in the Samaria, they need to be the same thing. So for him, home missions and overseas missions were not two different things. They were like one thing. And he put as much emphasis and as much effort into research and to study to reach the lost beside him in his city of New York City, just as much as he did sending his first missionaries overseas. And I think that that's a principle that I have tried to adapt in my own ministry, to see God at work in those places. When you join with your pastor in prayer, or with your small group leaders, or with your home Bible studies, wherever you are and you gather together to pray, and you pray for the lost, God is hearing your prayer. He's answering that prayer. And I am the answer to many people's prayers. And the people that serve with me in Guinea are also the answer to many people's prayers. One of the first thing that I started when I went to Guinea was to begin a community radio station. And that was the answer to about 10 years of prayer. I didn't even know that when I started the radio station. I didn't find that out until about a year and a half after the radio station was broadcasting, when another missionary came with his wife. They had lived in Guinea before. Now they were in another country, and he was just coming back to greet everybody, say hi. I had him over for supper, and he said, I hear you started a radio station, and I told him the wonderful, miraculous story of how God began that radio station. And that's when he told me that he's an American missionary. He mobilized all of his prayer supporters in America with another Dutch missionary who mobilized all of his prayer supporters in Holland. And they had prayed for 8 years that God would raise up a Christian radio station in Conakry. And not only that, but he said, and where is the radio station? I'd like to come and visit it now. And so I told him, you know, where he could meet me the next day. He just about fell off his chair. And I then almost fell off of my chair as he told me how that was the very same building that him and that other Dutch missionary had stood in front of that building 8 years before, and they had claimed that building for a Christian radio station to bring God's news to the country. So that was just kind of another confirmation that it wasn't my idea, it was God's idea. And he raised up people to pray, and his plan and his purposes were accomplished. And so the radio station is kind of the main thing that I do, the main thing that I would say is the root of all the other wonderful things that God's doing in Guinea. Out of the radio station, we started a prison ministry. A number of years ago, I felt really convicted that I tithe, but I felt like now our radio station should be tithing. Like we should be putting aside 10% of our income as a radio station towards something. I didn't really know exactly what yet, but I really felt convicted that we should begin tithing. And we get our resources for the radio station partly through advertising that we do inside the country and partly through donors like yourself who support this ministry. And so I decided we should listen to the Lord, obey that command. I had never even really heard of a business tithing before, but I have since then learned that this is not an uncommon thing. So I started putting this money away and praying and asking the Lord, what do you want us to do with that? And a little while later, the Lord sent this young woman to my office. She said, I'm a pharmacist. I've been going to this little Bible school, and I really feel like the Lord is saying to me, you know, you should be in full-time ministry, but I don't know what to do. I'm not going to be a pastor. That women aren't pastors in Guinea. So what am I going to do? She said, do you have something for me? And I said, okay, well, then let's pray about it. And as we prayed about it, the couldn't have been my thought because I never would have thought of it. The Lord said, you should go to the local prison, to the prison downtown, the big prison. And so I said, let's go down there and just walk there and we'll see what God has for us. And sure enough, when we got there, we got in, they let us in. We went into the cell where there was about 70 ladies in one cell. And this was just like, I just knew this is where we're supposed to be. And so we started using that money to provide the means to do ministry in the prison. And so that was one of the ways that we started using the tithe money from the radio station with the women. And then I discovered they had a little chapel there that the Catholic Church had built. I asked them if we could use it. They said yes, and we started a Protestant church service amongst the men. And in the past 3 years, we've baptized over 59 men and one woman in the prison. And God is really at work there. It's a third world country and a third world prison. The conditions are extremely poor, but God is at work there. And people are coming to Christ on a regular basis. And I love being in the prison. I just love what God is doing there. It's so exciting. And then out of the radio station, we have always broadcasted some biblical programs. And about 2.5-3 years ago, I'm sure most of you had heard that there was an Ebola crisis in Guinea. And at that time, I was told that I had to leave. The Canadian government was, you know, forcing all of us Canadians to come back home. And so that was a really difficult time for me. I didn't really understand. And I was told, you need to take all the stuff that is important to you because there's a good possibility that you won't be returning. And I couldn't understand what God was doing there because everything seemed to be going so well in the ministry. Why would he all of a sudden like that take me out? But I ended up in Quebec for 5 months. And as I arrived in Quebec, the word of the Lord was very clear to me. And he said, I don't want you to plan anything. Like, no more planning. Like, you're just going to be here and you're just going to appreciate me. You're just going to appreciate being with me. You're always praying. You're always asking me for something, whether it's a message or something for your ministry or whatever. You always got a request. And I want you to just be here, and I want you to just request me. And I was like, Lord, that's like taking a fish out of water. I don't know how to do that. But okay, I'll be obedient, and I won't plan. And so I spent many days just being with the Lord and just being with him for who he is. And that was like the beginning for me of a really awesome next level or next space and next journey in my ministry. When I got back to Guinea 2.5 years ago, I arrived back and I really felt like the Lord was saying to me, if you keep doing the same thing the same way all the time, you're always going to get the same result. So I'm asking you to just lay down all those plans that you've had in the past and all the ways you've been doing things and just be open to let me make those plans for you. And I said, okay, Lord, I thought I was doing that. I thought I was already doing that. And he said, well, yeah, kind of, but, you know, there's always another deeper, deeper place to be with me. So some things came to an end and new things began. For about 8 years, I had an infant rescue center where we accepted abandoned babies. And we had stopped receiving babies. And so I had now just a couple kids left to adopt. And they were adopted. And now that is officially closed. But there are numerous other people that have taken up that ministry in the capital city. And so I don't feel like it's something that closed. It's just something that got transferred into somebody else's hands. And I can feel good about that. So as the rescue center was closing and I was saying, okay, Lord, what do you want me to do? I really felt like he wanted us to even do more in the prison. And so we ended up building a hairdressing school. This is a facility that's more than 100 years old, a facility that should house about 400 people. It has 1,700 people. It's a little cramped. And there's no place to do anything, no place to have any opportunity to be with people and have a project with them. So we built a small container, and that's where we have our school. And we now have a four-day-a-week presence in the prison instead of just a one-day-a-week presence. And that is going great. Difficult, but great. Great for God. And so we started that, and then I felt like the Lord had spoken to me about, I had been going to a specific church, and the ministry of the radio station had kind of been feeding into this one church, and the Lord had told me to, you know, just end that relationship. It wasn't a bad thing. It was just like, no, I want you to do something different. So we had a space and time of about a year where we didn't broadcast any live programs, live biblical programs. And then I felt like the Lord was saying, you need to really develop your ministry, raising up young women. And I have a lot of women who do work for me, but this was like, you know, you need to take it to the next level. You need to mentor young women, and you need to equip them for the ministry. So we had prayed together. I had prayed with all of my leaders from the radio station, from the prison. And we had heard the Lord say that you should start this program up again, but this time we're going to let women be the ones that pray on the radio and not the pastor. So it's lay people. So I had two older ladies. They began, and after the first broadcast, the phone doesn't stop ringing. People are calling. They are desperate for prayer and to be prayed for in Jesus' name. And so we started that on a Thursday for an hour, and then couple weeks later, we opened it up for Friday for an hour and a half, and again with a new group of people in another language, and we just have people calling off the hook. So after a couple months, they said, well, we need some place where, you know, where we can meet and pray face to face. And I was, oh, Lord, I don't know if I can do that. What do you want us to do? I don't want to have a church building, because that is kind of difficult for some women and for some people to walk into a church. I want to have someplace kind of neutral. And so he had been speaking to me about some of the ministries, again, of A.B. Simpson and of another guy called John G. Lake. And A.B. Simpson had what he called the Baraka Healing Homes. And so people that were really sick, it's not sometimes when you pray for people's healing, they don't always get immediately healed. They need they progressively get healed. And he raised up, trained people to pray for the sick, and they would receive prayer 24 hours a day, and often they would leave those homes healed. And so I said, Lord, well, I don't exactly want to have people stay over. What do you want? And he said, make it a clinic, like a hospital clinic. And so we started that. We have a spiritual clinic since last February, so about a year now. And we have about 12 volunteers that come on a regular basis. And most of the people, when they've been prayed for on the radio, we call them back. And if they need more prayer, they come to the clinic. And God just miraculously answers prayer and gives them their desires of their heart. Ladies come that have not been able to get pregnant for years. And we have been to the hospital numerous times to see bouncing babies. And that's the joy of seeing God work. And so we also began in the clinic a time for people to come and worship. There's a lot of young people who have amazing talent, and there's a lot of need for the Ghanaian church to have local music that's come up through the local talent. And so Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, young people come to the clinic. They have their own room, and they worship, and they worship, and they worship. And we really know that this worship is also a part of the warfare, winning lost souls to Christ. Now, I am not a music leader. I don't play an instrument. I don't really sing very well. You know, I am not an evangelist. I don't regularly lead people to the Lord. I am not one that has some amazing ministry of praying for the sick and getting them healed. That is not what God has gifted me to do. What God has gifted me to do is to empower others to be the visionary, to be the one that raises up others. Since the beginning of my Christian life, the Lord's always asked me to do things that I don't know how to do. And I just kind of, at the beginning, was naive, and I just thought, well, if God's going to ask me to be the Christian education director at Grand Prairie Alliance Church with not even graduating from high school, well, obviously he's got something there. You know, obviously he can do it, and I'm just like along to be obedient. And as I stepped out in those acts of obedience, this is one of the ways that God uses me, is to do to be the visionary, to get things going. And I always know if God lays something on my heart, he's laid it on somebody else's heart, and somebody has been praying for that. And so you can know that your prayers, as you pray for your community, as you pray for those of us who work at a distance, you can know that God is raising up people to be the answer to your prayer. And I just challenge you to have that same posture as other people pray. Are you willing to be the answer to somebody's prayer? God works through people. He doesn't just miraculously zap a turkey dinner onto the table. He lays that on somebody's heart that somebody needs some food. They prepare the turkey dinner and they bring it over. And that's how our Father works with us. We partner with him. He partners with us, and we do his will in his way for his purpose. And that is for people, souls, to know him and to be able to worship him. I want to tell you, I'm going to show you a little video in a few minutes. I just wanted to give you a little idea of some of the things that I do, so that when you see the images, you'll kind of know what they're all about. I just want to tell you one really significant story of a young man. His name is Emmanuel Ba, and he's a Ghanaian guy. When he was 18 years old, he knew that there was no real future for him in Guinea, and so he does like what a lot of young guys do. They make their way up to North Africa, hoping to get on one of those little boats and get over to Europe. And so he left at 18. He was in Libya for 5 years. He finally got on one of those little boats, ends up in Switzerland. Well, he doesn't have the paperwork, so he can't work legally, so he's going to make his living selling drugs. So he was there for about 3 years selling drugs, and then it got too hot, so he decided he'd go over to France. Now he's living in France. He's living with a lady, and he's selling drugs, and that's how he's making his living. Well, one day the police picked him up, and it wasn't for selling drugs, so he didn't end up in jail, but it was for being an illegal immigrant, and they were going to deport him. And for some reason, he didn't even understand it, but he just knew that he should allow them to deport him. Because he could have married that lady, she would have married him, and then he could have been a legal citizen. But no, he decided, no, I'm going to let them deport me. Now, in his story, he would say that since the time he left Guinea, every couple of months, he would hear an audible voice. Someone would say to him, "You shouldn't ought to be living like that." And he would look around and he couldn't see anybody. He didn't know who said it. But it was the same words with the same voice, no matter where he was. He heard that voice. And so he came back to Guinea, and he's still selling drugs, but he would get a group of his friends around the radio listening to my radio station late at night, like 11 o'clock at night, and they would listen to this program called The Road of Righteousness in his language. And it was a program that was chronological Bible storying, starting from Genesis up until Jesus, talking mostly, focusing on the need for a blood sacrifice and the need for this sacrifice to be the forgiveness of sins and not just the covering of sins. And it was while he was listening to that program that he actually realized that this voice that was speaking to him was God. He didn't know any other Christians, so he led himself to Jesus, alone, by himself. So now he's looking for a place to learn about Jesus. He goes to the main intersection in Conakry, which is just down the street from the radio station, and he just starts asking around to all the other Muslims around him, "Hey, do you know where there's a church? Hey, do you know? Do you know? Do you know?" And they said, "Well, there's a cross over there. Maybe that's it, you know?" So he goes to that church, and he starts attending there. But after 2 or 3 months, it's like he's not comfortable. There's something the Lord is saying, "No, this isn't the place I want you to be. I want you to be someplace else." He is literally walking the streets, looking around, street after street. Finally, he finds a place with a cross, and he goes in, and he starts attending that church. So now he's attending the church, and my best friend, Henriette, who is my closest worker in Guinea, she is an elder in that church. And so she starts discipling him. He meets his wife, who's also of his people group, a recent Christian. They get married. They have a child. And now I have never met this guy yet. So I'm here in Canada, and they call me, and they say, "Well, we need a new person at the prison. We know this guy. Do you think it'd be okay if he became one of our staff at the prison?" And I was like, "Well, if you can say a good thing about him, it's just fine with me." So I come back and I meet him and I ask him, "Well, so how did you come to know the Lord? Because not very many Fula people are Christians." And he told me the story. And I just was like, "Lord, this guy has led hundreds of people to Christ. Just hundreds. And that's because of the radio station. And he's just one amongst many." I mean, the Lord has just opened my eyes and given me divine appointments to meet people that have come to know the Lord through the radio station. And so I would say thank you to all of you who have prayed. You may not feel like you've had some big part, but you have had a part as you have prayed for the ministry in Guinea all through these years. God is at work. In the people that God has brought to work with us in the last couple of years, I have 9 national women and 4 men that work with us at the prison. I have 15 people that work as employees at the radio station. I have about 22 people that are volunteers for the prayer and healing program and in the spiritual clinic. And God has raised up all of these people. And as I speak to them, as they came into my offices or to the clinic, and I ask, "Well, you know, why would you like to do this ministry?" And how they've spoken about how God spoke to them about this very thing before they even knew that there could be the possibility of something like that existing. Over the course of time, I have really come to appreciate the value of my roots. I wasn't raised in the Alliance. I became a Christian later in life, 27, and I've really come to appreciate the legacy that God has given us. And as we are there someday, I won't be there anymore. I'm not a Ghanaian. I won't live there forever. But the prayer that you pray for those leaders as they are raised up, and God will create another generation of leaders in that place, and it will be on the foundation of our prayer as we pray and work together. So now I'm just going to ask that you show this little video. It's kind of self-explanatory, but I just wanted to like show you some of the faces, some of the people, and some of the places where God has been at work. Those last couple of pictures, I, you know, kind of took them clandestine-like in the prison. And that is the chapel in the prison. Christmas time, we had a meal. We cooked together Christmas Eve all night. And in the morning brought a meal for the 120 believers that were in the chapel, and then shared that with the authorities, the guards, and things like that. Being there Sunday, Thursdays, in the prison chapel, being there Christmas Day, there is no place that I would rather be. Those men worship the Lord in their suffering and in their difficult situation. The president of the church has been in jail for 9 years and hasn't even yet been in front of the judge to receive his sentence. And yet he says, I am not a prisoner. I'm on an adventure with God. And when I serve with people like that, it just humbles me to the core. You are a part, a vital part of what God is doing all over the world. You are a part of what we're doing in Guinea. You're a part of, I heard some wonderful testimonies this past evening of Food for the Hungry in Rwanda and how you've participated in that. And you are the cause of many people coming to know the Lord. And I just want to thank you and encourage you and just say God is with you.
Colette brought with her this little brochure that talks about our work in the Alliance around the world. There's a few of them on the table at the back, but I can order more. So there's about four of them there that you're free to pick up. And if you would like one of these and there's none at the back there, let me know and I will be glad to order more. As well, Colette's prayer card is at the back for you to pick up, and it tells a little bit about her work so that you can pray more effectively. And as well, beside the prayer cards, there are some sign-up sheets. If you just put your name and your email on there, once a month she sends out a prayer letter and includes a little video of some of the work that's going on and some of the things that Jesus is doing in the country of Guinea. So please take advantage of that. That table is in the foyer as you head out of the building later on.